This is The Growth Journey. Real life, real growth, divinely inspired, where military discipline meets a ministry heart. With 40 years of life-shaping experience, including 22 years on active duty, and a deep calling to ministry, David Averett, CEO and founder of CA Jail Outreach Nationwide, shares spirit-led wisdom and practical tools to transform your life. He's also the author of an ebook on growth, bringing even more insight to help you flourish in faith, marriage, leadership, character, church, and business. Ready for divinely inspired results? Let's get started.
Let's get started.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're sitting down with a really interesting piece of writing. It's an excerpt from a chapter titled Growth, Your Seat at the Table, The Five-Chair Blueprint for Growth.
That's right. And our source material, well, it comes directly from the author, Mr. David Averett. We're focusing specifically on his framework for personal and team development. You know, it's clearly a text that draws very deeply from his own pretty diverse background.
Yeah, definitely. So the mission for this deep dive, our goal here, is to really unpack the most important ideas, the nuggets, from this chapter. We want to understand the core of this five-chair blueprint strategy he lays out.
Right.
And also the crawl, walk, run method, which sounds like a key part of it.
Mm-hmm.
How he suggests applying it across different kinds of teams like admin, technical, ministry teams, and maybe most importantly, the critical significance of this concept the author David Averett calls the Promise Keeper Principle.
Exactly. Think of this as a shortcut, really. It's a way for you to get a handle on a very practical framework for growth and leadership that, well, you could actually start thinking about using.
Exactly. We're taking this source, this chapter, and exploring its core ideas. We're not just summarizing, but, you know, connecting the dots, highlighting what really stands out as insightful and why it matters for you, our listener.
Right. Whether you're maybe leading a team currently, or perhaps you're looking to grow yourself, or maybe you're just, you know, fascinated by effective development strategies, it's about getting to the heart of David Everett's specific approach to building strong, committed individuals and ultimately strong teams.
Okay, so before Mr. Everett even gets into the actual mechanics of the five chairs, he starts by grounding everything. He talks about his foundation, right? He mentions his background, shaped by, well, a lot of listening, personal experiences, his education, various work environments.
And it's quite a foundation he lays out. He specifically highlights his 22 years as a combat veteran. Now, this isn't just like a biographical detail he throws in.
Yeah.
He explicitly states this experience profoundly shaped him. It taught him discipline, resilience under, you know, extreme pressure, and definitely strategic thinking.
Yeah.
He uses this phrase, the grit of combat, which really underscores how formative that was.
Yeah, that phrase really lands. And that military background, it seems woven right into the fabric of his approach to leadership and commitment. It feels like it instilled this, I don't know, non-negotiable standard.
Mm-hmm.
He even has a quote that connects directly to this. David Averett says, "My time in the military taught me the true meaning of discipline. It's not just about following orders. It's about internalizing a commitment to excellence, no matter the challenge."
That word internalizing is so key there, isn't it?
Totally.
It's not just about the outward action, the following orders part. It's about developing this inner drive towards excellence, regardless of the situation.
And what's fascinating, I think, is how he translates that really intense internalized military discipline into a broader principle, something about commitment and effectiveness that's applicable in, well, pretty much any context, right?
Right.
Absolutely. It's a thread we see very clearly woven through his entire training philosophy, especially when we get to that concept he calls the Promise Keeper later on. It's about that unwavering standard, that internal commitment.
He also talks quite openly about his faith journey, specifically noting its beginning way back in July 1979.
Right.
Growing up in a Christian home, learning from pastors and teachers, you know, helping start churches, serving in various ministries, gaining experience as a preacher. It's clear this is another really significant, deeply personal element shaping his perspective.
Yeah, and he doesn't just mention it. He connects his faith directly to what he identifies as his core strengths. Things like teaching character development, actively practicing servant leadership, and being, in his words, a devoted husband and father who actively supports pastors and churches.
So it's this blend.
Exactly. Professionally, he also mentions his experience building and leading organizations, creating efficient systems, and inspiring people. So it's this unique blend, you could say, of disciplined personal character forged in the military, deep faith principles cultivated over decades, and really practical hands-on application in all these diverse settings, military, ministry, professional. That blend seems to define his approach, according to Mr. Averitt himself.
He describes his overall approach using words like analytical, grounded in leadership, driven by a servant's heart, and fueled by what he calls a deep love for the word and prayer. Yeah. It really paints a picture of a holistic view of leadership,
right.
One that integrates personal conviction with practical strategy.
I think that's a great way to put it. This comprehensive background, the discipline from the military, the principles from his faith, the practical professional experience, David Averitt presents this as the very source, the wellspring for his insights and for this blueprint he's sharing with us. Oh. He even shares a quote that sort of sums up this journey. He says, "My life's journey, from the grit of combat to the quiet devotion of faith, has taught me that true growth is forged not in comfort, but in consistent effort and a willingness to learn from every experience."
Not in comfort, but in consistent effort.
Mm.
That really emphasizes that growth isn't easy, right? It requires that consistent effort and, crucially, like he says, a willingness to learn from all experiences, the tough ones, the personal ones, everything.
It sounds like he sees growth less as something you're born with, like innate talent, and much more as a deliberate ongoing process, you know, putting in consistent effort and being a kind of perpetual student of life and experience.
Yeah, exactly. And he has a specific quote about servant leadership that feels really foundational to how he views the leader's main job in developing others within this whole framework. David Averitt says, "True leadership isn't about being in charge. It's about taking care of those in your charge. That's the essence of servant leadership."
That quote is incredibly powerful, isn't it? It really shifts the perspective. It's not about the position of authority. It's about the responsibility and the care.
Right. It frames the leader as being fundamentally responsible for, well, nurturing and guiding their team members, helping them reach their potential.
That quote really sets the stage for how he views the leader's role in development throughout the rest of the chapter.
Okay, so moving into the core philosophy that's driving this blueprint, David Averitt emphasizes that building a strong team through intentional leadership and mentorship is absolutely crucial. He says it's vital for the health and effectiveness of any organization or church. It's not just a nice to have. It's like the engine of growth.
And he's very clear about who is responsible for this. It's the CEOs, the founders, the pastors, the staff leaders, whoever's in leadership. They all need to be actively involved in training and mentoring.
So you can't just delegate it away.
Not entirely, no. He sees it as a core function of leadership itself. It's something leadership must be directly involved in to be truly effective.
He talks about implementing some kind of structured process, maybe an application process, to help leadership identify the best fit for each role on the team.
Right, being intentional about placement.
Yeah, ensuring team members can contribute effectively using their diverse skills and, importantly, find some fulfillment in what they're doing.
And this connects directly to his idea about identifying potential. He highlights the, well, incredible potential that he believes lies within individuals. He emphasizes that not everyone is going to fit neatly into traditional roles or predefined boxes.
Well, that's okay.
And that's totally okay. He stresses that everyone possesses unique qualities worth celebrating and, crucially, cultivating. He gives some relatable examples like, you know, not everyone has the personality or gifting to be a big public speaker or in a church context, maybe a frontline soul winner or a super extroverted person.
Right.
But, he argues, everyone can find their special place, a place where their specific, maybe non-traditional gifts can truly shine and contribute meaningfully. It's about recognizing and really valuing that individuality.
That really resonates with me, the idea that leadership's job isn't to force people into a mold, but to find where they fit best.
Mm.
And David Averitt uses this great analogy in a quote here. He says, "Every person holds a unique key to unlock a door of potential. Our job as leaders is to help them find that key and the right door."
I love that analogy. It's not about the leader handing them a key and pointing to a door. It's about helping them, the individual, discover their own unique key, their abilities, and then find the environment, the right door, where those abilities are best used and can be developed further.
So, as a leader, Mr. Averett says your role is crucial in helping people uncover these unique, maybe even hidden, abilities to serve and grow.
Exactly. And while encouraging participation in various activities or ministries is generally good for exposure,
sure.
He stresses it's vital to align individuals with roles that genuinely match their strength. You want to avoid throwing them into situations that are overly challenging or intimidating right at the start, because that could just discourage them.
He suggests exposing individuals to different ministries or departments or skill sets gradually over time. This lets skills be discovered more naturally, right? Through exploration and exposure.
Yeah, that kind of guided exploration can reveal new interests, maybe hidden talents, aptitudes they didn't even know they had, without overwhelming them by demanding mastery in unfamiliar areas straight away.
He also emphasizes something he learned from his military background, the importance of remaining open to new ideas and perspectives.
Yes. Regardless of where they come from in the organization, listening to suggestions from anyone on the team, even people in training or seemingly junior roles.
That can be hard for some leaders.
It can be, but he argues being willing to adapt strategies based on those ideas can lead to achieving objectives more efficiently than just rigidly sticking to the old ways, just because that's how we've always done it.
That's such a powerful point. The people actually doing the work often have the best insights on how to improve it. Mr. Averett warns specifically against that rigidity.
He states that genuine openness to new perspectives and actually being willing to implement good ideas doesn't just improve processes. It also deepens the organization, fosters growth for everyone involved.
And the flip side?
Well, if leaders don't foster an environment where sharing and implementing ideas is encouraged, people might feel their contributions aren't valued. They might just, you know, seek support or opportunities elsewhere.
So this openness, this willingness to learn and adapt as a leader, it's key not just for unlocking the abilities of the team members being trained.
Right. It's also key to unlocking the leader's own ability to learn and adapt. It's really presented as a two-way street of growth in David Averett's framework.
Makes sense.
He has another quote here that really reinforces this organic nature of development if the right environment is provided. He says, "Growth isn't about forcing someone into a mold. It's about cultivating the ground so their true talents can blossom naturally."
Cultivating the ground. I like that. It paints a picture of nurturing, like a gardener tending to individual plants, providing the right soil and conditions for each one to flourish in its own unique way.
Exactly. Rather than trying to sculpt them into some predefined shape.
Okay, let's get to the concrete framework David Averett proposes. The five chairs training strategy. He uses this concept, right? Five chairs in each key area or department as a way of visualizing placement, progression, development during training, and beyond.
Yeah, it's a simple, clear structure to guide the process. And the goal is straightforward, but I think quite profound. For an individual in any given chair to master specific objectives and learn essential skills before they move to the next chair.
So it's sequential, but mastery-based.
Exactly. You don't just move on because, you know, a month has passed. You move on because you've achieved the necessary understanding and competence for that seat, that chair.
And this progression often follows a method he calls the crawl, walk, run, or CWR training method. Can you break that down for us directly from the source? How does the author, David Averett, describe this three-step process?
Absolutely. It's a layered approach, really building from foundational understanding all the way to complete independence. So first is crawl.
Crawl.
You start by teaching a skill very slowly, very methodically. This phase is all about ensuring the individual has a solid foundational understanding. You explain the why behind the task, the basic steps, the tools involved. It's slow, deliberate instruction to lay that groundwork.
Got it. Slow and steady.
Then comes walk. Here, you transition to a guided practice phase. You perform the task yourself, demonstrating each step while the individual watches you. But crucially, they then begin to practice the tasks alongside you.
Okay, so they're doing it, but with support.
Right there with them. You're providing guidance, immediate feedback, corrections, in real time. They're doing it, but with your support and example right beside them.
Makes sense. And the final step?
Run. Finally, you allow them to take charge of the task independently. They execute the task from start to finish on their own. Your role shifts here. You become more of an observer, providing support only as needed. You might step in for corrections, answer questions, offer guidance if they hit a snag, but essentially they are running with the skill.
And you're there to coach if they stumble.
Precisely.
So it's this carefully managed, gradual release of responsibility. It builds confidence and competence step by step, ensuring they can actually do the task on their own eventually. David Everett even has a quote about applying this method, right? About its effectiveness.
Yes, he does. He says, "I've applied the crawl, walk, run method extensively, and it consistently proves that patiently building foundational understanding leads to confident, independent action."
Patiently building foundational understanding. That seems key.
His personal testimony to its power. Patience and building that strong base are essential to unlocking that independent performance. The primary objective, really, of using CWR within the five-tier structure is to enable individuals to manage their tasks competently and ultimately independently.
Right.
Once someone in a chair can reliably do that, they're ready to potentially move to the next chair. And you, as the leader, you're then freed up to start training the next person in that first chair. It creates this repeatable, scalable cycle of development.
Now, David Everett makes a specific point of highlighting one chair in particular. He says, and this sounds serious, without embracing its principles, everything could fall apart.
Yeah.
Or the individual might just perpetually struggle, never really succeed in the role. He calls it a crucial chair and explicitly promises to explain its profound significance later. That really flags it, doesn't it? It feels like the non-negotiable element.
It totally sets up the promise keeper, which we know as chair five as the absolute cornerstone of the whole system. It implies that all the skill, all the knowledge, the practical application gained in those first four chairs, it's just not sufficient without this deeper element.
So it's about character, reliability.
It suggests exactly that. Character, reliability, commitment are just as vital, maybe even more so, than the technical or task-specific competence you build earlier.
He also talks about the simple chair method, describing the process of someone's journey through these five stages. A primary objective, especially early on, is assigning people to the right teams or chairs based on existing skills, if possible.
Right. But he acknowledges, very realistically, that many people who volunteer or join a team initially, while they lack clearly defined or demonstrated skills, or maybe they just haven't had the chance yet to develop abilities they might have.
So what does he suggest for those folks?
For those without immediately recognizable skills, Mr. Everett often suggests placing them initially in the administration team. He sees this as a really practical starting point.
Why admin specifically?
It's a valuable way to assess their abilities, their work ethic, because admin tasks are pretty fundamental and they're needed almost everywhere in an organization. This initial placement, he stresses, isn't necessarily permanent.
Oh.
It serves more as an observation and development phase, kind of a low-stakes environment where they can start discovering that potential he talked about earlier, maybe figure out where their strengths lie.
He has a quote tied to this idea of untapped potential, doesn't he? Reinforcing why he might use that initial admin placement strategy.
He does. It emphasizes the exploratory nature, he says. I truly believe that within every individual lies incredible untapped potential. It's our job as leaders to help them discover it, even if it doesn't fit a traditional mold.
So that initial placement, like starting an admin, it's really about exploration and development, not just filling a slot.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's about providing an environment where that potential can actually start to emerge and be seen. This whole process, really, from that initial placement through the progression in the chairs, it highlights the importance of dedicated learning, of what David Everett calls sitting down and learning.
Right.
Through this structured journey, he believes individuals can truly grow. They can move from being maybe curious seekers of knowledge or opportunity into becoming enthusiastic, competent contributors. And in a faith context, he notes, this can even lead to them becoming disciple makers, fostering both spiritual growth and a strong, reliable work ethic that's applicable anywhere.
But the leader has to initiate it.
But, and this is a crucial point Mr. Everett stresses repeatedly, leaders must take that first step. They have to actively train and mentor their team members. The initiative and the framework really have to come from the top down.
Okay, so David Everett applies this five-chair concept as a template for structuring training and development in several key operational areas, common areas in churches or organizations. He lists four specific areas where he structured these chairs: administration, technical, ministry, and interestingly, a five-chair energy boost, specifically designed for leaders themselves.
Yeah, that last one is key. He notes these areas aren't set in stone. They can and probably should evolve as the organization was, which he actually sees as a positive sign of health.
Right.
The key, he advises, is to keep the core five-chair concept simple and replicable. That way, leaders at all levels can train others effectively using this consistent framework. Leaders can incorporate their own unique ideas, their insights based on their specific context.
But there's a condition.
Yes, but these additions must always align with the organization's overarching vision and mission. So he then provides examples for admin and technical teams, touches briefly on ministry, and then details that energy boost framework for leaders.
Let's dive into the administration team first. He suggests this is often a great starting point for people who are just developing skills or need a place to explore their aptitudes. Admin covers essential stuff like updating stats, managing emails, basic social media content, mailouts, digital files. Kind of the engine room, right?
Absolutely, the essential engine room. For the administration team, David Averett's five chairs combine that initial training with ongoing support for skill development, following that CWR principle we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
He details the progression like this. First is chair one, welcome and lay of the land.
Okay, chair one, what happens there?
The action here is a dedicated month-long onboarding process. It's focused entirely on understanding the administrative functions. This means getting thorough walkthroughs of all the current systems, communication platforms, basic finance procedures, filing systems, HR processes, operational workflows. They get hands-on training with these tools.
So it's very practical.
Very practical. They meet key people they'll interact with, learn the organization's culture, communication norms, how decisions are made. They're also given a clear outline of current priorities and the existing state of admin tasks they might encounter.
Why is this initial chair one so crucial, according to Mr. Averett?
Well, it provides the absolute foundational knowledge. Without it, they're just sort of fumbling in the dark, right? It helps them understand the overall operational landscape and clearly identify who to ask for help, which is vital for a successful transition and integration. The author, David Averett, has a quote emphasizing this starting point. A strong beginning lays the groundwork for sustained success. Chair one is where clarity takes root.
Clarity takes root. I like that. So establishing clarity from day one, what's next?
But chair two, what success looks like early on. The action here shifts. It's about collaboratively setting clear, achievable expectations for their first 30, 60, and 90 days. The focus narrows to maybe 2-3 key admin areas or critical processes they can start to master or take ownership of relatively quickly.
Like what?
Like managing a specific email inbox or overseeing basic data entry or handling initial social media scheduling, things they can get their arms around.
And why is this chair two crucial? For momentum.
Exactly. It provides immediate direction, prevents overwhelm. Crucially, it allows for those early, tangible wins, which are so important for building confidence and showing capability. It helps focus the initial training efforts on specific, measurable outcomes. David Averett's quote here captures it perfectly. Small wins build momentum, define them early, celebrate them often, and watch confidence soar.
Small wins build momentum.
Makes sense.
On to chair three.
Chair three. Learn by doing, with support. Here, the action involves shadowing the leader or experienced team members as they perform key admin tasks. Then it includes gradually delegating responsibilities, starting with less complex tasks, like maybe drafting a routine email, and increasing complexity as they show competence, like managing a full mail-out process.
But the leader is still involved.
Critically, yes. The leader remains readily available to answer questions and provide guidance as they execute tasks independently. Imagine them drafting that email while you're sort of looking over their shoulder, ready to answer questions about tone or process.
So it's practical application with a safety net.
Exactly. It's practical on-the-job training within the organization's specific context, not just theory. They're learning the real-world stuff by doing, but they know support is right there. The quote for Chair 3 is clear on this. The best lessons are learned in action, not just in theory. Our role is to provide the arena and the guidance.
Providing the arena and the guidance. Okay, chair four.
Chair four, fostering ownership. As they get more comfortable, competent, confident in handling tasks independently, the action shifts again. Now it's about actively encouraging initiative.
What does that look like?
Prompting them to propose solutions to admin challenges they see, empowering them to make decisions within their defined scope. Letting them manage their designated areas of responsibility with minimal direct oversight.
So this is where they move from just doing tasks to really owning the outcomes.
Yes, exactly. And why it's crucial. This level of empowerment fosters a deep sense of ownership, encourages critical thinking. It enables them to contribute more strategically and grow significantly as self-directed professionals. David Averett's quote emphasizes this critical shift. Don't just give someone a task, give them the ownership of the outcome. That's where true commitment begins.
Wow. Ownership of the outcome. That's powerful. And chair five?
Chair five, promise keeper. It's listed as the final chair for the admin path. This indicates that once someone reaches this stage of competence and ownership, the focus shifts to that deeper level of reliability and commitment. The profound significance, as Mr. Averett says, which he details later.
Got it. Okay, so then he moves on to the technical team. He states their strength and adaptability are, absolutely crucial in today's fast-paced digital world, right? Website, social media, YouTube, email marketing, all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely critical. And Mr. Averett notes a specific challenge leaders often face here, mentoring tech talent effectively. You need team members who not only master the rapidly changing tools and platforms,
which is hard enough,
right, but also develop the strategic insights to apply those tools effectively towards the organization's goals. Transforming a collection of individual tech specialists into a cohesive, high-performing unit is vital, and he emphasizes proactive mentorship from the leader is key. He outlines four targeted training chairs for technical teams.
Okay, what's chair one for tech?
Chair one, baseline and big picture. Actions here involve making sure the tech team member understands the team's overall mission and exactly how their specific tech skills fit into the bigger vision, the strategic objectives. It involves a baseline assessment. What are their current tech strengths? Where are areas for growth? And then aligning their talents with the collective technical objectives right from day one.
What's the quote David Averett uses for this chair one in the technical context?
He says, "Before we build, we must understand. What are our tech strengths and where do we aim to go?" It's about getting everyone grounded in the purpose, understanding the current state, and having a clear target before any building starts.
Makes sense. Chair two for tech.
Chair two, tooling up and knowledge building. Actions here involve mastering the essential tech tools and platforms for their role. Could be CMS software, analytics tools, video editing, email platforms, whatever it is. This means accessing targeted training, courses, internal guides to build a really solid knowledge base. The aim is rapid expansion of their technical expertise and confidence in using the tools effectively.
And the quote for chair two here?
Knowledge is power, but applied knowledge is unstoppable. Get the tools, then learn to wield them. This highlights it's not just about knowing about the tools, but actively practicing and learning to use them effectively to get results.
Learn to wield them.
Yeah.
Okay, chair three.
Chair three, synergy and practical experience. Actions here involve actively jumping into collaborative projects, places where they can see their skills and other skills working together. They gain hands-on, real-world experience working on live tasks, challenges that contribute to the organization's goals, learning by doing together as a team. Imagine a web dev working directly with a content creator and a social media manager on a live campaign.
So the emphasis is really on teamwork, collaboration, and applied learning in a real-world setting.
Yes, absolutely. Combining individual skills in a practical, collaborative way to amplify the team's impact. The quote reflects that. The magic happens when individual skills unite. Practical experience together amplifies impact.
Love that. Magic happens when individual skills unite. Okay, chair four for tech.
Chair four, future-proofing and empowerment. Actions in this chair look ahead. Exploring emerging tech trends relevant to their area. Actively preparing for what's next in the digital landscape. It involves encouraging tech team members to take initiative on new projects, maybe lead technical initiatives, contribute unique solutions, and feel empowered to make decisions within their domain and drive results.
So this is about encouraging innovation and taking charge within their technical expertise.
Exactly. Not just keeping up with tech change, but positioning the team and its members to get ahead, enabling them to lead within their specific domain. The quote captures this. Don't just keep up with change, lead it. Empower your team to innovate and take the reins.
Lead change. Don't just keep up. Strong advice. And chair five for tech.
Chair five, promise keeper. Listed again as the final crucial chair. Here, it's specifically defined by actions like commit and deliver, consistently following through on tech tasks and projects. Becoming a trusted pillar, establishing that reputation for reliability within the team. And owning your word, upholding technical standards, meeting deadlines, following best practices. This explicitly links that technical competence and innovation to reliability and character.
Interesting how that promise keeper concept threads through different team types. Now, David Averett also briefly touches on the ministry team. Their mission, he says, is fundamentally about helping people find purpose and meaning.
Right. And while he notes he doesn't detail the five chairs here because he has other resources for that, he reiterates the core principle still applies. Not everyone will excel at traditional outward-facing ministry like, say, soul winning or preaching.
And that's okay.
That's okay. But everyone on a ministry team should understand how they can get involved in a way that aligns with their unique gifts and abilities. He frames the chairs in this context using powerful biblical references, giving them a specific spiritual weight.
What are those references?
For chair one, it's come and see, referencing John chapter 1, verse 39, that initial invitation to explore. Chair two is follow me, from John chapter 1, verse 43, a call to active discipleship, learning directly. Chair three is become a fisher of men, Matthew chapter 4, verse 19, actively engaging, putting learning into practice. Chair four is go and bear fruit, John chapter 15, verse 16, producing tangible results. And chair five, again,
promise keeper.
Promise keeper, maintaining that steadfast commitment in their service.
He makes a key point about training across all these teams, though, right? About readiness.
Yes, a crucial overarching point. Do not move a participant to the next step or chair until they are fully prepared and have demonstrated mastery of the current stage. Readiness precedes responsibility.
So no just pushing people through.
No. He stresses that just having people sit around waiting or assigning tasks they aren't ready for just leads to frustration and disengagement. Idle time is counterproductive. Active engagement and progression based on readiness are key to effective development and, importantly, keeping committed individuals. He also notes, circling back to his earlier point, that someone starting in admin or tech might discover a passion for ministry later, and this framework allows for that kind of organic movement between teams.
This principle of readiness guiding progression, David Averitt captures that in a quote too, specific to ministry but clearly applicable everywhere.
He does. He says, in ministry, just like in any team, readiness precedes responsibility. We don't push, we prepare. It's a concise reinforcement of that mastery-based progression fundamental to the whole five-chair method.
We don't push, we prepare. Okay, now let's really dig into what David Averitt identifies as the crucial promise keeper, that fifth chair, the cornerstone in every structure he presented. What does this really mean, and why does he say so strongly that without embracing its principles, everything else could, well, fall apart?
Well, he connects it directly to the profound importance that the Bible places on keeping promises, especially promises made in a sacred context, or really promises made to others in general. He quotes two key passages from Scripture to underscore the weight he personally places on this principle.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first passage he draws on is from the Old Testament, Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. And it reads, if a man vow a vow unto the Lord or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth.
Wow, that's pretty direct.
Very direct. Leaves no room for ambiguity, right? It stresses in the strongest terms that vows and oaths made, particularly in that sacred context, are considered absolutely binding. They must be honored without fail. It's about your word being your solemn bond.
Okay. And the second passage he uses.
The second comes from the wisdom literature, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 4 and 5. This one delivers an equally powerful message. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay.
So that adds a warning, almost.
Yes, a stern warning and some practical advice. It strongly suggests it's far wiser not to make vows if you're unsure you can truly keep them. But once made, it warns against delaying fulfillment, defer not to pay it, and states clearly that breaking promises once made is something God, in this context, takes no pleasure in. It really underscores the extreme seriousness and binding nature of making and keeping commitments.
So the biblical teaching that David Averitt draws on for the foundation of his promise keeper concept is intensely focused on the sacredness, the binding nature, the non-negotiable requirement of fulfilling promises and vows once they're made. So it's a very high standard.
Precisely. Mr. Averitt summarizes that these passages teach a clear lesson. Be cautious. Be prudent. Don't make promises you know or suspect you can't keep. But, and this is the absolutely critical part, once a promise is made, whether it's a vow to God or an agreement with other people, it is considered bound and must be fulfilled. This establishes promise keeping not just as a nice trait, but as a fundamental, non-negotiable aspect of character, with profound implications for reliability and trustworthiness.
He has several powerful quotes within the chapter that really underscore how central this concept is for him and why it's chair five, right?
Yes, several that really hammer it home.
What's the first one?
He says, for me, the promise keeper chair is the ultimate test of commitment. It's where competence meets character and where individuals truly become invaluable assets.
Competence meets character. That really links the skills from chairs one to four with this foundational element.
Exactly. It's not enough to be able to do the job. You must commit to reliably doing it. Then he says, I've seen how consistently keeping promises, both big and small, builds a foundation of trust that is indispensable for any thriving team or organization.
So it's about building trust through consistency.
That vital, intangible, yet absolutely indispensable foundation of trust. It comes from demonstrated consistent reliability. Then he gets personal. My wife is a living testament to the promise keeper principle. Her unwavering dedication, even when life threw challenges our way, is a model I often share.
So he makes it tangible, something he values deeply in his own life.
Absolutely. It's not just theory for him. And finally, acknowledging the challenge, he says, teaching someone to be a promise keeper can be challenging, as deep commitment is a muscle some haven't flexed. But finding that individual who embodies it, that's gold for any leader.
Okay, so it can be hard to cultivate, but finding someone who gets it is incredibly valuable.
Immensely valuable. Those quotes really drive home how central this concept is for David Averitt's entire framework. It's not just another step. It's presented as the fundamental bedrock of character and team effectiveness.
So what about the practical implications? When someone reaches this promise keeper chair, they've done the training, they understand the mission, they should be equipped to work pretty independently now, right?
That's the idea. And before they formally step into this established role as a Chair 5 team member, Mr. Averitt says it's absolutely vital for the leader to have a deliberate conversation with them, a conversation about the commitments, the promises they've made, whether those were explicitly stated when they joined or just implicitly understood as part of the role.
So it's a clarification, a reaffirmation.
Exactly. And this conversation, he explains, is also the right time to review the organization's standards of conduct and behavior. And given Mr. Averitt's background and the context here, in a faith-based setting, he highlights the importance of discussing spiritual disciplines like tithing, Bible reading, prayer, making it clear how these might be expectations woven into the organizational culture and commitment.
So the leader sets the rules of engagement.
Yes. Based on the organization's vision and, in faith contexts, guidance from God. It's about clarifying and reaffirming expectations around commitment, conduct, reliability at this final crucial stage.
Now, at Chair 5, team members are expected to commit significant effort. David Averitt suggests something specific for volunteers.
Yeah.
A promise of 80% consistent effort. Why 80% and not 100% for volunteers? That might surprise some leaders.
He gives two very practical, I think, empathetic reasons for this standard for volunteers. First, most volunteers and organizations are juggling other significant life commitments.
Yeah, jobs, family.
Exactly. Full-time jobs, family responsibilities, health issues, other community stuff. Expecting a constant, rigid, 100% commitment on top of all that can just be unrealistic. It can lead to burnout and often isn't sustainable for someone volunteering their time.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second reason?
Second, setting a goal of 80% commitment acknowledges that, well, life happens. It sets a high yet achievable bar for dedication and consistent contribution. It allows for the inevitable realities of life, external demands, occasional unforeseen circumstances, without excusing a general lack of significant effort or follow through. It's a realistic standard for consistent, valuable contribution from someone balancing multiple priorities.
That sounds like a really practical and understanding approach for volunteers. What about paid team members in this framework? Is it different?
For paid team members, yes. David Averitt says the expectation is generally different. They should aim to give 100% effort because their role is their profession, their primary work commitment.
And if they consistently don't meet that?
If a paid team member consistently fails to meet that expectation after reaching this stage of competence and understanding, he believes the leader has a responsibility to guide them. Not necessarily fire them immediately,
right,
but guide them towards finding a different position or role within the organization that better aligns with their actual capacity, their available time, or maybe their passion. It's again about finding the right fit where they can consistently meet the expected level of commitment and performance for that role.
So different expectations based on the role, volunteer versus paid, but a clear, discussed, agreed upon standard of commitment for each. He also reiterates his belief in finding that right fit with another quote, right? Connecting back to unlocking potential.
Yes, it beautifully connects back. He says, the most fulfilling part of leadership is seeing someone find their special place, the role where their unique qualities shine and they truly thrive. This emphasizes the goal isn't just filling slots, but helping individuals find where they are most effective and fulfilled, which is good for everyone involved.
Now, you mentioned he uses his wife as a detailed example of a promise keeper. Can you share a bit more about that?
Yes, it's a very personal and illustrative example. He recounts her dedication over the 16 years she taught at a Christian school. Beyond just teaching, she was also active in the choir, taught Sunday school, served as a bus captain, planned numerous school and church events. A lot.
Wow, that's incredible commitment across many areas. How specifically did she demonstrate this promise keeper principle over that long period?
He emphasizes her remarkable consistency and reliability. He states she rarely missed a meeting for any of her commitments and consistently fulfilled her responsibilities over those 16 years. He mentions she missed only about 12 times in total due to genuinely unavoidable things like surgery or significant family illness.
That's amazing consistency over 16 years.
It really is. He shares how they had to adjust, scale back on some commitments when they had their child a natural life change. But even with those adjustments, she made it a priority to attend her core essential meetings and complete her most critical tasks. They adjusted for things like family vacations or when their daughter was sick, showing flexibility.
Real life.
Exactly, real life. But her underlying commitment to her core responsibilities, her promises, was consistently demonstrated over a very long time. It wasn't about perfect attendance at everything, but about consistent, dedicated effort and reliability where it mattered most.
And he has a specific quote about her that highlights this.
Yes, underscoring how significant her example is for him, he says, "My wife embodies the promise keeper principle. Her unwavering commitment, even amidst life's changes, is a testament to true dedication." This personal anecdote makes the principle very concrete, very real world.
So David Averett notes that teaching this principle is essential because some people just might not have learned how to keep promises or understand the weight of commitment.
Right. He acknowledges it can be challenging to cultivate this quality, calling deep commitment a muscle some haven't flexed. But he strongly advises leaders not to give up on people too easily.
But you might lose some people.
You might, inevitably. Not everyone will have the capacity or willingness to reach or embody this chair. But, he stresses again, finding someone who does embody the qualities of a promise keeper is incredibly valuable gold for any leader. These people are steadfast, reliable, dedicated. They become invaluable because you can trust them to follow through.
Okay, moving on to the final section of his framework presented here. David Averett adapts the five-chair concepts specifically for leaders themselves, focusing on their energy, well-being, sustainability. He calls it the five-chair energy boost. This feels crucial, acknowledging leaders need their own framework too.
It really is. He acknowledges that leaders today navigate this incredibly complex environment, constant challenges, constant opportunities. But this often comes at a significant cost, leading to what he calls leadership fatigue.
Yeah, I think many listeners can relate to that term.
Absolutely. He shares poignant, relatable examples from managers he's encountered who feel completely overwhelmed or even experience severe health issues directly because of chronic stress and workload.
Like that manager who said, "I want to be an empathetic leader and support my team, but we still have to meet our numbers. Mostly, I just stay late myself to get it all done." That just perfectly captures the tension, doesn't it?
It really does. Or the even more serious case he mentions of the manager whose stress took such a toll they ended up in the hospital. These aren't just hypotheticals. They're real experiences highlighting the gravity of leadership fatigue.
So what's the solution, according to Mr. Averett? Less empathy.
No, definitely not less empathy. He suggests the answer is practicing empathy sustainably. This means consciously setting healthy boundaries, proactively preserving your own energy, and modeling a positive, resilient leadership style for your team. He frames five actionable, and he says uplifting strategies as chairs, specifically for leaders to combat this fatigue and foster a supportive environment for themselves and their team.
He has some introductory quotes for these here, right? Reflecting the themes.
Yes, setting the stage. First, I've been there, the burnout, the feeling of, I just stay late myself to get it all done. That's why these energy boost chairs are so vital. They're about sustainable empathy.
So connecting it directly to his own experience and sustainable empathy.
Exactly. Then my journey taught me that you can't pour from an empty cup. Designing my recharge rhythms became non-negotiable for me to lead effectively.
Highlighting the necessity of intentional self-care for leadership.
Mm-hmm. Then As a leader, I've learned that truly empowering your team means trusting them to find solutions, not just fixing everything for them. It's a shift that liberates everyone.
Pointing to empowerment as a way to free up the leader's energy.
Right. And finally, the celebration chair is more than just recognition. It's about building a culture where shared success fuels morale and strengthens the bonds that hold a team together.
Defining the purpose of that last leadership chair, leveraging success for energy and cohesion. Okay, let's break down what David Everett includes for each of these five leader chairs.
Okay, first is chair one, the coach's chair. The core idea here is empowering your team to find their solutions so you don't have to be the primary problem solver for everyone else.
How do you do that?
Actionable insights include consciously using open-ended questions like, what options have you considered? Or how do you think we could approach this to guide team members instead of just jumping in with the answer or fixing it yourself? Practicing active listening, fostering problem-solving skills by framing challenges as learning opportunities, consciously building long-term capability in your team, even if fixing it yourself seems faster right now.
What's the uplifting aspect of this coach's chair for the leader?
The uplifting aspect is celebrating their problem-solving successes, their growth. This empowers them, shows your trust, and crucially, it frees up your own mental energy and time. It's a shift in burden that benefits everyone. The quote provided emphasizes this. Your role isn't to carry every burden, but to equip others to carry their own. That's how a team truly thrives.
Equipping others to carry their own.
Yeah.
Okay, chair two for leaders.
Chair two, the recharge chair. Core idea. Proactively manage your own energy with consistent habits that genuinely refresh you. Actions include establishing specific, non-negotiable morning-evening routines, maybe meditation, exercise, planning, reflection. Consciously scheduling recharge zones throughout your day. Short breaks for a walk, breathing, music, quiet. Protecting your focus time during peak productivity hours. Integrating essential physical well-being habits, exercise, healthy eating, adequate sleep as priorities, not afterthoughts.
So intentional scheduled self-care isn't a luxury. It's framed as vital for effective leadership.
Absolutely. The uplifting aspect is viewing these routines not as rigid constraints or optional extras, but as essential acts of self-care that directly enable you to be your best, most resilient, effective self for your team. It reframes self-care as a necessity for sustainable leadership. The quote David Everett uses is blunt. You can't pour from an empty cup. Prioritizing your energy isn't selfish. It's essential for sustainable leadership.
Can't argue with that. Chair three.
Chair three, the clarity chair. Core idea. Develop the ability to clearly distinguish real priorities from unnecessary crises to conserve energy and sharpen focus. Actions involve using tools like the urgent versus important matrix, the Eisenhower matrix, to categorize tasks based on what truly drives results and aligns with long-term goals, not just what feels urgent. Actively questioning the perceived urgency of requests. Using a conscious pause button before responding immediately to assess true importance. Matching similar tasks together to work more efficiently.
So this chair is about helping leaders regain control over their time and energy, directing it purposefully.
Exactly, the uplifting aspect. This approach empowers you to reclaim control. It significantly reduces stress by allowing you to respond thoughtfully, not reactively. It ensures your limited energy goes towards what's truly important, not drained by constant low-value interruptions. The quote reminds us to cut through the noise. Noise often drowns out purpose. Find your clarity, and the truly important will always rise to the top.
Find your clarity. Okay, chair four for leaders.
Chair four, the renewal chair. Core idea. Consciously dedicate time to personal growth, passions, interests, completely outside your leadership role. This is about staying inspired, maintaining perspective, building resilience. Actions include intentionally blocking you time on your calendar, connecting deeply with your personal why, what motivates you beyond the job, seeking mentorship or learning opportunities aligned with personal interests, not just professional ones, taking small, consistent steps, reading unrelated books, hobbies, nature, connecting with friends and family.
This sounds like nurturing your identity beyond just being the leader to prevent burnout.
Precisely, the uplifting aspect. Actively recognizing and nurturing your identity, interests, relationships outside work makes you a more well-rounded, grounded, and genuinely inspiring leader. It's vital for ensuring your spirit and personal energy are also being fueled, not just drained by leadership demands. The quote captures this beautifully. Your spirit needs fuel too. Invest in your passions outside of work, and you'll find renewed vigor for your leadership journey.
Your spirit needs fuel too. Love that. Okay, the final leadership chair, chair five.
Chair five, the celebration chair. Core idea here is effectively distributing tasks by genuinely trusting your team, leveraging their skills, and consistently recognizing and celebrating contributions. Key actions involve clear delegation to find outcomes, grant authority, provide resources, set check-ins, matching tasks not just to talents, but also to growth opportunities. Consciously letting go of perfectionism, trusting that done effectively by others, is better than creating bottlenecks yourself. Consistently using the power of recognition publicly, privately, be specific, sincere, fostering a strengths-based culture where team members leverage each other's abilities.
This chair seems to tie leadership self-care, like avoiding burnout from doing everything yourself, directly back to empowering the team and boosting their morale.
Precisely. It's self-care through team empowerment, the uplifting aspect. Graceful, trusting delegation builds capability and trust. Consistently celebrating individual and team successes significantly boosts morale, fosters a positive environment, and strengthens those essential collaborative bonds. The quote David Averitt provides summarizes this focus on the collective. A leader's true success isn't measured by what they do alone, but by the collective triumphs they enable and celebrate.
Okay, so David Averitt summarizes these practical ways to train and motivate teams using these frameworks. He suggests leaders often kind of know the answers intuitively.
Yeah, the ideas are stirring within them.
Right, but structured frameworks like the five chairs, CWR, the promise keeper concept, they act as triggers, right? To formalize those thoughts and help leaders actually implement structured development strategies.
Exactly. And he strongly stresses the need for both organizations and individuals to continuously improve skills through ongoing education, training, deliberate practice. While having diverse skills is good, he argues it's critically important to focus on becoming an expert, achieving mastery in key areas essential to your role or the mission.
He uses that specific metric, doesn't he? The 7 out of 10 challenge.
Yes. If you currently rate yourself as 7 out of 10 in a skill, he challenges you to deliberately aim for a 9 and then consistently, relentlessly push towards an 11 over the years through intentional practice and learning. He has a quote about this specific pursuit. Don't just be good. Strive for mastery. The journey from 7 to 11 is where true excellence is found.
The journey from 7 to 11, it's about intentional, continuous improvement.
Right. Not just doing the work, but approaching it with that mindset. He reiterates it with another, quote, emphasizing the drive. I firmly believe that if you rate yourself a 7 in a skill, the true drive is to push for a 9 and then relentlessly pursue that 11. That's how real mastery is achieved. It's about that relentless pursuit.
He also emphasizes the absolutely crucial role passion plays in all this.
Yes. If you or your team members lack genuine passion for a role, a task, the mission, he strongly encourages leaders to take the time to help them discover what truly ignites that spark.
Because mastery alone isn't enough.
Apparently not for fulfillment. Mastering skills, he argues, when paired with genuine passion, leads to both excellence and a much deeper sense of personal fulfillment. He has a quote specifically on this. If you or your team aren't passionate about a role, I encourage you to take the time to discover what truly ignites that spark. Passion combined with skill leads to fulfillment.
So helping people find that spark is integral.
Integral to both their fulfillment and their potential for excellence. Finally, David Averitt ties it all together. Achieving sustainable success requires combining this dedicated skill enhancement, the pursuit of mastery, cultivating authentic passion, and having a compelling, clear vision guided by core values and, in faith contexts, aligned with God's will. This combination, he argues, sets you and your organization on that sustainable path.
And he connects this back to his own experience.
Yes, explicitly, including his military service, he says. Throughout my career, including my military service, I've seen firsthand that combining dedicated skill enhancement, authentic passion, and a compelling vision leads to undeniable success. That's Mr. Averitt's ultimate recipe for growth, distilled from his diverse experiences.
He also mentions the progress of the growth resources he's creating, website views, ebook downloads, Spotify listens, showing these ideas are connecting with people.
Right.
And he lists some upcoming chapters showing the breadth. Growth. Helping your toddler learn. Wow. Versatile. Growth. The hidden power of organizational titles. Growth. How to lead when you're not in charge. And the recently released Chapter 6, Growth. Claiming ownership of an idea.
Yeah, he notes, Chapter 6 delves into taking personal initiative and accepting responsibility for your own ideas, which sounds like another crucial element of individual growth. He also points listeners to a resource for the foundational material, www.agileoutreach.store, where you can get the free ebook or audio for Chapter 1, Growth, your simple guide to growing.
Wow. Okay, that was truly a deep dive into a very practical, very principle-driven framework for growth, for individuals, for teams, from David Averitt's Foundational Influences Military, faith to the step-by-step CWR method, the structured five chairs, that crucial promise keeper principle, and even the vital reminder about the leader's energy boost chairs. There is a lot there to chew on.
There really is. And the way he applies that versatile five-chair concept across different areas, admin, tech, ministry, leader self-care, shows its adaptability. Plus, that consistent focus on the promise keeper as the cornerstone. It really highlights that competence isn't enough. Character, reliability, they're fundamental to success and trust.
Thinking about this whole blueprint laid out by Mr. David Averitt, what specific idea or nugget stands out most powerfully for you? Is it that 7 to 11 mastery challenge, the weight he puts on the promise keeper, or maybe finding passion within your role?
That's tough. But I think for me, it's that consistent thread woven throughout. The combination of intentional structure development, the CWR, the chairs paired with character and intrinsic motivation, the promise keeper, the passion. It's competence meeting character, as David Averitt puts it. It's this holistic view of growth that values both skill and reliability equally. Sees them as inseparable for real, sustainable success.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, as you go about your week? Well, this five-chair blueprint from David Averitt offers a structured, actionable way to think about developing yourself and helping others grow. It's a clear framework for placing people where they can shine, learn through structured progression, and are anchored by that deep commitment to keeping their word and pursuing excellence.
Yeah, and it raises a really important question, I think, that Mr. Averitt's framework forces us to consider. If cultivating individuals who embody that promise keeper principle is so fundamentally vital for building a team based on trust and reliability, what small, specific promise can you commit to keeping today? Maybe to yourself, pursuing that 7 to 11 mastery, or maybe to someone else on your team, something that could start building or strengthening that indispensable foundation of reliability he emphasizes so strongly.
What small promise can you keep today? That's a powerful, actionable thought to leave with. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the five-chair blueprint and the insightful framework presented by Mr. David Averitt. We hope this helps you in your own growth journey.
Thanks for joining us on The Growth Journey. If you're ready to keep growing in faith, leadership, and life, be sure to follow the show and share it with someone on their own path. For more resources to connect with David Averitt, visit cajailoutreach.org. Until next time, keep pursuing real life, real growth, and divinely inspired results.